This is Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk at St. John's College at Oxford, England, where one of my ancestors, Stephen Batchelor, matriculated on the 17th of November, 1581. It is always 5 minutes, 2 seconds behind Greenwich London time on the clocks at Oxford, and it was that way in towns all over the world because each town kept its own time independent of other towns up until the 1600s. King Charles II started standardization of time to keep track of where the British ships were on the globe in relationship to the Royal Observatory site in Greenwich. It was not until 200 years later, in 1884, that an international conference in Washington, D.C. voted to choose Greenwich as the center of the world time. Today, time zones around the world are still measured in relationship to the north-south meridian that divides the globe and runs through the Royal Observatory site in Greenwich, which is in South London. Time is essential for navigation for vessels at sea and to understand the charts that are used to avoid collisions and guide you where you want to go. Every 1 degree on the chart is 4 minutes of time, 60 minutes of time divided by 15 degrees of longitude. 1 minute of time on the chart is 15 minutes of longitude. So the coordinates of Oxford, England are 51 degrees, 44 minutes, 60 seconds north of the equator and 1 degree, 15 minutes, 24 seconds west of Greenwich. That is why Oxford time is 5 minutes and 2 seconds behind Greenwich time. Time still plays a major role in celestial navigation on the water, which is used by ships and boats at sea when the electronics go out. Differences in time and longitude are how celestial navigators determine their longitude. They have an accurate clock, which tells them exactly what time it is in Greenwich, and they use the stars above them to determine their local time for the given date. For example, they know from an almanac when a certain star should be in a certain location on a certain day of the year, and they already know the date. So they measure the location of the star or sun, and then they're able to determine their local time. By comparing their local time to the time on their clock or chronometer, which is set to Greenwich time, they can determine their longitude. If your chronometer is off by 4 seconds, your longitude will be off by 1 nautical mile at the equator. A clock that is off by 4 minutes will put the navigator's location off by 60 nautical miles at the equator. Therefore, it is imperative that an accurate clock be tuned precisely to Greenwich Mean Time to successfully use celestial navigation. And if you don't know where you are accurately in relationship to the map you are using, then your ship may be off course enough that you will not get to your destination, or even worse, might hit rocks below the surface of the water that are marked on the chart. This is Karen Lyle from Salesport Talk reporting to you on Sports Byline, which is broadcast to 100 million people in 168 countries around the world, all of which keep track of their time in relationship to Greenwich in the south of London, England.
All right, thank you for that, Christopher Cross. And you hear that at 9:40 on a Tuesday, that can only mean one thing. It's time to bring in my co-host for our SalesportTalk.com segment. It's Karen Lyle, who's in studio. How you doing, Karen?
I am doing great. You know, as I was driving over here looking at the Bay Bridge, I just remembered how beautiful San Francisco is. It is just gorgeous here.
You've been in that hellhole London all these weeks.
Well, no. London is amazing.
I love London.
I really do.
All right. By the way, I like the outfit. It looks like something from Harrods or Selfridges. Savile Row, am I right?
You know, I got some boots from Westminster that were just really awesome. Some Italian boots with stiletto heels.
Oh, my gosh. I know. That was at Churchill's War Room?
No, and I didn't walk all the way to Church's war room in them.
All right, fair enough. So this is sort of the your debrief, as you like to call it. Tell us more, please.
Well, you know, while I was there, just on the last day before I left, I met someone who told me about a new race that's coming. And it is kind of comparable to CLGP. It's going to have 10 locations around the world. Mm-hmm. And franchises with individual teams. It's called the E1 Series. And it is single-handed foiling boats with electric motors and no sails. So they're power boats in a Formula One kind of race.
I saw that. But they look more like what do they call those, cigar boats, like those ridiculously like spaceship crazy boats with like one little pod in the middle with the pilot, right?
Right. And one of the things there that I talked to one of the people who's considering buying one of the franchises, and so I can't talk more about who that is because all of that's in development. But the E1 series is on the internet, so I can talk about that.
Okay.
I think this is a great idea for the power boaters because, you know, sailing, the word sailing is used for sails that, boats that have sails, boats that have power, and even naval vessels, right?
We
call it all sailing. Mm-hmm. And so anything that's a sport on the water has got to be interesting.
I saw that Rafael Nadal, one of the greatest tennis players ever, Spanish champion, that he has become an owner in the E1 series. So it seems like it's gaining momentum. And they had some sort of show in Venice?
Yes, they did. And that was a demonstration of the vessels, I guess we will call them, the boats.
What would you say? Because when I look at those, they look like those kind of boats that go so fast that they just disintegrate if they hit a wave. I mean, are we talking about like 100 knots and things like that?
Well, you know, there's a limitation because of cavitation. Remember we had talked about that early on.
The limitation of cavitation?
That's right.
The titillation sensation?
That's right. It could be a little song. Limitation of cavitation.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it is what happens when the foils are going through the water and it reaches a boiling point, it slows things down. And
boiling point?
Yes.
Wow.
So the water boils and
it literally boils?
It does. It literally boils from the speed.
Wow.
And then what happens is the boat can't go any further. So I think 58 knots is the limit that they're able to do. And this is one of the things about, you know, if you're taking people from the racing community who are used to 128 miles per hour for cars on the land.
Right.
And putting that on the water, now we're sailing. We have current, we have whales, we have, you know, all kinds of different obstacles that are unique to the water environment. So those who are Formula One racers will be learning about what it's like on the water, because I think a lot of people who are going to be attracted to the powerboats are not necessarily going to be attracted to the sailing boats.
Well, that's what I admire about you, is that you could be very much a sailing snob where you would say like, oh, these fast things, this isn't sailing, but I like it. Anything on the water, you're game for it.
Well, my dad is a powerboater, and so I grew up with powerboats up in the Delta. I was zipping around in the
Where
little...
did you grow up?
Well, I was born in San Francisco, so I'm a third-generation San Franciscan.
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad had a boat that he kept up near Stockton in the Delta.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, so we went through several different boats, but he always had the little vessels that we could, run around and do our powerboating. So I didn't start sailing until 2005.
Really?
Yeah. So I feel...
It was all pianos before then?
Well, pianos didn't even start until 1982.
Really?
So.
So now, we're speaking with Karen Lyle, SailSportsTalk.com, as we always do Tuesdays at 9:40 a.m. Pacific. you made some great connections. You have the hookup. I admire your networking skills. And everyone loves you because you're so friendly and affable and all that. But going back...
So you say.
as far as I'm concerned, going back for King Charles' coronation in a few weeks.
Yes.
Tell us more, please.
Well...
I have a feeling you won't be standing outside Buckingham Palace. I have a feeling you're going to have a hookup somehow.
I will be at two different clubs, at the In-N-Out Club, which is a Navy and military club. Yes. No, nothing to do with hamburgers. It was around in the 1700s. You know why it's In-N-Out, don't you?
Because you take the boat in and out?
Because they had horses and buggies, and they had to have an in marking and an out marking so they wouldn't hit each other going opposite directions.
Can I tell you something interesting?
Yes.
Well, maybe it's not interesting.
No, I'd like to hear it. Absolutely.
So, you know Henry VIII, right? He changed the entire British Isles from Catholic to this new thing called C of E, Church of England, just so he could get a divorce. And right around that same time, all the bridges in Rome, there were so many accidents, people running into each other with horse carts, that the Pope said, from now on in Rome, everyone passes on the right. And in fact, let's make it the world. So that news hit England right around the same time, and Henry VIII said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to pass on the left because you said right. And that's why today in England, you drive on the left because of Henry VIII being petulant.
Now, I didn't know that particular story. I've got one for you.
Give me.
Do you know why we eat with our forks and knives opposite as the way they do in England?
I don't know why.
Well, because right before the American Revolution, those people who were not loyalists and who wanted to know who each other were, who were the revolutionaries, changed the fork and knife.
Oh, so that was a little
sign.
And
so when we won the war, then basically that became the way that we eat.
I did not know that. Very interesting. I remember they made fun of, I spent many summers in Europe, and when I was 18, my German friend's dad made fun of me because I'd get a big sausage and I would cut it into biteable pieces and then start eating it, whereas they're supposed to, you're supposed to cut one and then eat one. All right, this is going off the rails. Let's get back to the coronation. So you're going to be at the In-N-Out, and what's the other club?
The Sloan Club.
Which is?
Which is a reciprocal club in Chelsea that is reciprocal to the
West
Metropolitan
End.
Club. Yes, yes. So the In-N-Out Club was booked on the 5th and 6th. I will be at the In-N-Out Club on the day of the coronation.
What is the actual day?
I think it's the 6th of May.
You think?
And you know that that's when the SailGP races are happening. So I want to set it up so that you can go over to the SailGP race. You wanted to have some swag and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And so maybe you and Patty can go over there and you
sure.
can see that race.
Is that a Saturday or Sunday?
It's going to be on that weekend, and it's just right over here in San Francisco. Okay. And you said, hey, I want to go, so
yeah.
I can make those arrangements
for you. Free
beer
and sushi?
I would have been there if it weren't for the coronation. You know,
yes.
This is only happening once in a lifetime, so.
Yeah. Charles had to, he was the longest Prince of Wales of all time.
Well, and I met the press secretary for the Prince of Wales.
Did you?
Yes, and he was at the In-N-Out Club, and he just sent me a LinkedIn request.
Not the
actually.
not Wills, you mean Charles when
Charles.
He was. Yeah.
Charles when he was
mm-hmm.
right, from 2004 to maybe 2014, I think it was. And so he was one of the speakers at a 161st first club dinner that we had at the In-N-Out Club. And
wow.
I have to tell you, after I heard his speech, I thought, you know, that's like the difference between an impromptu and a sonata. That's a sonata.
Wow.
He was so inspiring that it actually influenced the way in which I feel about when I give my own speeches.
Wow. That's something. Yeah, Dominic just checked. It is May 6th.
Okay. I thought it was.
Yes. You don't want to be late.
No, I'll be there on the 1st. So
good. You're just coming home really to water the plants and go back.
Well, I've got to come home to sail a little bit and then go back.
Wow.
You know, that's going to be part of the experience.
Someday
there.
I hope to be independently wealthy.
You keep saying that, but you know, I'm not independently wealthy. I just want to set the record straight.
Just wealthy enough to sail around and go on trips. Listen, I admire it. I'm jealous.
Well, it's really just working for yourself and then being able to set your own schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a digital nomad per se, but I can work from anywhere, so that's a good thing.
I always thought of you as a digital nomad.
That's what they call it now. The people who are traveling all throughout Europe and, you know, don't really stay in one place and they're working for a company remotely, they call them digital nomads.
Wow. Yeah, I think about the pandemic. I mean, look at downtown San Francisco. It's not even half full anymore because people can just stay home.
Yeah.
And people realize, I don't need to be a waiter at that restaurant anymore. Unemployment pays better. And then society collapsed. All right. So what do you have planned? Are you going to stay at the Sloan?
Well, I'm staying at the In-N-Out Club, except for on the 5th and 6th.
Okay.
Because they didn't have any openings that night. I'll be at the club, but I'll be staying at the Sloan Club. That's why it helps to have more than one club you belong to.
Where will you view the I would imagine... The procession would probably, I don't know, would it start south of the Thames in Greenwich? And I mean, would it wrap around Piccadilly and Trafalgar Square and all that?
Well, usually there's what happens on the street, and then all of the private clubs and are all full with members who are having entertainments inside the clubs. Mm-hmm. And so they'll usually have a screen so you can see what's happening with the coronation.
Gotcha.
But then we're having some of the military band We had this wonderful club dinner where they actually had the Royal Guards on the stairs. And when we went up one at a time up past the guards, you know, with the tall beaver hats and things like that.
The Busbies.
And another thing that was really cool about the way in which they do a formal dinner, a black tie, is that everybody has a seating chart and they look at it beforehand. And then they go into these long tables and they stand behind their chair and nobody sits. Everybody stands. So all people are standing at attention behind their chair until everybody is in their place. And then the chairman knocks the gavel and calls, you know, welcomes everybody. And there's a prayer. And then there is a toast to the king. If the king has written a letter, which in one of the events that I went to, he had, someone reads the letter before the toast to the king. And it's pretty awesome.
Well, I was gonna say, like, as Americans, we love all that. Pomp and circumstance, you know, because it's just, it seems like almost like a movie to us, doesn't it?
Well, I've always been very comfortable with the formality, so it was really like coming home to me.
That's great. You know, and before we let you go, any closing comments you'd like to share with all of us?
Well, you know, I just love San Francisco Bay Area, and when I come back home, it feels like no matter where I am in the world that I'm at home. And this is where my dad lived all the time I was growing up, and I traveled with my mom different places. And so I'd always come back to San Francisco, and every time I'd come home, I'd go, oh, I'm home now. It's really great.
No, I hear you. There's no place like home, and you don't really appreciate it till you do start traveling around, huh?
But I actually really enjoy travel, too.
Yeah. No, me too. It's great. All right, Karen Lyle, check out more at salesportstalk.com, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, there she is.
Rick.
I'm Rick Tittle. We'll come on back on Byline.